9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal. Well, good afternoon, out and abouters. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 or 92.3 FM, also streaming from kyrs.org. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's another beautiful autumn day in Spokane. And I have my friend Sarah Lynch with me today. And Sarah is the executive director of the North Idaho Pride Alliance. Did I say that all right?
Yep, you sure did. It's a mouthful, but you got it right.
And so we're going to talk about an event that you have going
on. Yeah.
And tell people how they can do that, how they can go to it. But also, we're going to get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
And get to know the North Idaho Pride Alliance a little bit, too.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, why an alliance? What makes it an alliance? Are there different factions that come together? Is it like the Rebel Alliance? What is it like?
Yeah. Well, so the North Idaho Pride Alliance was founded back in 2016 by Julie Stratton, was a person in the community, LGBT community in North Idaho. And it was founded because it was a group of people who decided that they needed to come together and advocate for queer folks. Since then, NIPA has grown exponentially. We've evolved, we've transformed. And today we describe ourselves, obviously we're a 501c3 nonprofit, of LGBTQIA2S plus folks, who come together and partner with, community businesses and organizations, to create safe spaces for queer folks in North Idaho, which, most folks think is pretty unheard of. And we kind of encompass, you know, the entirety of the panhandle of North Idaho. There are a few, you know, smaller pride organizations that are pretty new and just trying to start up. And so we do our best to support those organizations as well. So it really is, a multifaceted, like you said, an alliance of, allies, partners, and LGBT folks community.
I was thinking about how, you know, there's probably so many different, you know, groups, like the NAACP in North Idaho must have a hard time, or the Anti-Defamation League. Probably there's just all sorts of groups that would be allied with you guys, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of our, there's a number of allies, obviously, but the Human Rights Task Force in Kootenai County, and then also up in Bonner County, the Human Rights Education Institute is a huge supporter, which that's where our Transgender Day of Remembrance is going to be held again this year. So, so yeah, absolutely. It's you know, my doctorate is in public safety, and so we talk about like a whole of government and a whole of community approach.
Right, and I should have introduced you. And I did have it on my notes as Dr.
Okay.
Sarah Lynch.
That's all right.
I had it written down that way, but I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I don't want to rob you of the work you did for your PhD.
It's okay. I mean, my brain thinks like that, though. It needs to be, yeah.
You need bona fides on, I mean, really, you do on these kind of things, I feel like, anyways.
Yeah.
How did you wind up getting involved? Now, we should just go way back. How did you and I first meet each other? Do you remember?
I do remember. I was going to ask you whether you remember or not.
I remember because we were at Huckleberry's.
Yes, we were.
And I don't know who approached who. I can't remember. Did I approach you or did you approach me?
I feel like I was kind of in a daze after work, just trying to go find food for dinner. And you probably approached me with a smile on your face. And
I said
hello.
Something like, oh, I used to wear one of those because you were wearing a flight suit.
Yeah.
Because Sarah is also a retired KC-135 pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so how long have you been retired now?
So I retired in 2019.
Okay.
So that's 6 years now. It's been a while.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Goes fast, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it sure does.
And I think, so of course, that probably would have been like probably right around the time I came out probably like 2017 or something, I bet, is when, when I introduced myself.
And,
and then I think we didn't, our paths never crossed again until I think it was a Pride Gala event.
Yes.
And that's where we got together again.
Yeah,
that was really fun.
Yep.
That was at the height of COVID.
Yes.
Yeah. So you you came to Fairchild. Where were you, where would you say you're from originally? We had kind of talked a little bit about this because you'd said you moved all these times, and I moved, like, I think before I was 16, I moved like 17 times.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So yeah. I get that moving bit.
That's a lot. Yeah.
It's hard to say where you're really from.
But. Right. Right. That is a tough question. I would say now I'm from, I live in Idaho. I'm from Idaho. That's home.
Yeah.
But I was born in Billings, Montana. I grew up in Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
We moved to Indiana when I was a sophomore in high school because my dad flew for UPS. And so their hub is in Louisville, Kentucky. So
My dad flew for FedEx.
Oh, really?
But back when it was Flying Tiger Airlines, and they got bought out by FedEx.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you get the
yes.
Dad being gone on trips all the time.
Which was a great thing in our house.
We prioritized travel, so that was good. I appreciate that from my childhood.
Yeah, because you could ride, you could just get on a plane and go. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
We lived in Billings as well.
Oh, okay.
We lived all around that area. Mm-hmm. And so you came to Spokane, did that, left for a little while, came back, retired.
Yes.
Then how did you get involved in the Pride Alliance?
Yeah, so I retired from the Air Force, and I wasn't sure what I was going to be when I grew up. right when COVID kicked off, I met my now wife, and so, you know, we all picked our COVID pods and we picked each other and we lived happily ever after.
Yay.
So I ended up in Idaho. All my friends keep, why in the world did you move from Washington to Idaho? It doesn't seem like a very smart move, but it was for the pretty girl. So that's how I ended up over in Idaho. And
she from Idaho then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. She grew up in Idaho.
In Coeur d'Alene area or was it? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So anyway, when we got married and I moved over there, we kind of started to hear about the North Idaho Pride Alliance, and we went to some of the, online programs that they had at the time because we were still being careful because of COVID. And we were impressed with it. And so we kind of stayed involved, and I, started volunteering, and then there were, an opportunity to apply for the board, which I did. And that was in 2022, right before our Pride in the Park, where the U-Haul guys showed up.
Yeah.
So with my background in the military and with public safety, I kind of fell into the role of a public safety liaison for that Pride in the Park. And after that, the board kind of took a step back and, wanted to decide what we were going to do after that. And I was really proud that they chose to be resilient and decided to hire on an executive director. And so I stepped away from the board at that point and applied for the position.
Well, and you mentioned that, and I did have that in my notes because it is kind of interesting because the Pride in the Park, the Pride Festival for Coeur d'Alene, that has had some interesting news things that have come out of it. Like all these guys that came out of the Ryder truck, their khaki pants, which incidentally, I'm sure they're all gainfully employed by ICE now, but thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
But also you had the Eric Posey, who was the, that wasn't then. You're giving me a nose. Okay. But there are things in the news.
Yes, absolutely. We made all kinds of exciting news that was unsolicited.
And then, but then the Idaho Family Policy Center, that's sort of like the group that sort of comes after Idaho Pride, right? I mean, North Idaho Pride a little bit.
Yeah, they definitely introduced, this legislative session, there were 19, I think, anti-LGBT bills or policies that were introduced. And a lot of those are drafted by the Idaho Family Policy Center.
That's well, and true. You know, and I think, you know, I go backpacking a lot. Uh-huh. My wife and I go backpacking all the time in the summertime. So, well, not all the time, but at least a couple times in the summer. But we always wind up going to Idaho. And I love Idaho. I love Bonner's Ferry.
Yeah.
You know, I love going up through there and, Sandpoint and all that and Coeur d'Alene too. Not as, I don't go to Coeur d'Alene as much. It just isn't on the way to where we want to go backpack. But I always have a great time there and I kind of always forget about it. And then, you know, I just go use the restroom I want to use. I don't think about it.
Yeah.
No one's ever said anything to me about it. I don't even really know what the law is there now as far as restroom usage. It seems to, these things change a lot.
Yeah.
But so, you know, when you hear from, because we're going to talk about Transgiving and the Transgender Day of Remembrance, but I want people, you know, who want to maybe come from Spokane to go over there.
Yeah.
Is there anything that people have to watch out for? Is there anything that, well, tell me about it.
Yeah, it's a tough question, right? Because they've introduced a lot of these bills and a lot of them are, to be perfectly frank, they're confusing and the enforcement is vague or unclear. So, there's this undercurrent of this legislation that is hugely anti-trans, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, I kind of said this, you know, when I moved over there to my wife that it's the oddest combination of like granola hippies and like really neo-Nazis that are at the time. I was like, oh, it seems like we're all just coexisting. But, you know, then that Pride in the Park in 2022 happened and I my eyes were opened and I realized, OK, we're not just coexisting. They're, you know, actively attempting to erase queer folks from Idaho and drive people out.
And that's so much of the anti-trans stuff is just to erase people. We, you know, can't use the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Utah had a similar thing that they did a couple years ago about not being able to use any of the state's bathrooms, government bathrooms. So I wrote a letter to the sponsor of that bill and then the Democrat who was against it and to the governor and I think to the attorney general. And I was like, I explained who I was, retired firefighter, veteran, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I'm going to go camping. My wife and I will go camping there. And I want to know when I use the bathroom at a state campground.
Right.
Do I need to turn myself in every time I use it? Or do I wait till the end and will you extradite me? I want to know. And then what about my friend who's trans male, who's got a beard and is pretty burly?
Right.
You're expecting him to use the ladies' room. Is that correct?
Right.
And there was no reply.
Well, and Idaho did pass a bill this last legislative session and they implemented it on July 1st, I believe. But they called it the, you know, protecting the privacy of women bill. But it's exactly what you stated.
Same thing.
You know, you have to use the bathroom of your birth, you know, your gender assigned at birth.
Right.
But again, it comes down, who's checking? Like, how do you enforce this?
Yeah, it's just such beating the trolls type of thing. And, you know, I find a lot of solace after this election that we've just had on Tuesday that so many trans and, all overall queer folks that have won offices in some pretty red areas.
Yes.
And, you know, and even here in Spokane, the one that kind of was, for me, I just couldn't believe was Sarah Dixit. I think Sarah Dixit beating Jonathan Bingle for the for city council.
Oh,
and Bingle is really anti-trans person.
Okay.
And he said he was, I don't know what church he was a preacher for, but he has done things with the Planned Parenthood, Church of Planned Parenthood.
Oh, wow.
Prayed with Matt Shea and all those people. Sure. But, you know, he was also, from talking to people who were in his district, he was a person that was really receptive to his to the people in his district, you know, mm-hmm. his constituents. He went, he answered phone calls. He did a good job in that regard.
Yeah.
But I think that people are just saying that's enough.
Right.
That's enough. And they're going to get rid of people like that. They're not mm-hmm. going to put them in office anymore. And I think a lot of us were kind of like kind saying, well, you know what? Sure. They may, this guy may says he wants to, wants me dead, but I kind of admire his fiscal policy. So I'm going to vote right. for him. And I bet we'll knock, you know, he'll uh-huh. come around. But then we see that that's not the case at all.
Sure.
And so I don't know. I take a lot of solace after this last election, and mm-hmm. maybe things will turn around in Idaho.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. And I'm hoping so too. I think, you know, 20 years in the Air Force, I spent focusing on fighting the bad guys. And yeah. I feel like now in my retirement, I get to do this job where I get to grow the good. And so, yeah. you know, despite, you know, I don't want to be a Pollyanna all the time. There's realism, but despite, you know, the difficulties that we're facing in Idaho, there's so many good people and so many folks, you know, who do support the LGBT community.
Absolutely.
And we just need to uplift those voices.
And, yeah. and I think those yeah. people, you know, I mm-hmm. see people wave at me more mm-hmm. and smile at me more than ever before. And I yeah. think that in some ways that we're like an embodiment of things that are decent and good compared to, like, you know, Trump and people who are a part of that cult. You know what I mean? I
sure.
think that we are, we're the face of the opposition. And I always thought it was kind of funny, like uh-huh. him going, you know, calling Zora Mondami a communist and all this stuff. And uh-huh. you're saying communist this, communist that. And I think, you know, people who don't know what communism is, if you're against it, they're going to think it's a really good thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I you're like probably Donald mm-hmm. Trump may be the best thing that ever happened for communism. Uh-huh. Maybe in the long run, a really good thing for us, although it's hard to say that for all our
yeah.
trans brothers and sisters who've been kicked out of the military.
Right.
For
right.
just being who they
for
are.
For serving. Yeah.
Yeah. For serving.
And, just and, the same way the rest of us did.
Yeah. Highly qualified yeah. people. And
yeah.
Well, we're going to break for doing, we're going to do our 20 minute stuff. But before we go, uh-huh. let's just kind of touch a little bit on Transgiving and the Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Okay.
And then tell people what it is.
Uh-huh.
And then how they can find out more or sign up to do it or whatever, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So our tradition for Transgender Day of Remembrance is that we do, you know, the solemn remembrance, and we read the names of all the trans folks who have lost their lives due to, you know, homicide or suicide over the past year. And it's heavy, obviously.
Is it just from this area or the United States?
It's for all of the United States.
Okay.
So we honor all those lives lost. And then we kind of shift, and we have a tradition of coming together for a Transgiving meal, which is kind of a Friendsgiving, but just try to end, you know, with some fellowship.
Yeah.
And it's the main course is catered by one of our partners, Eknis Catering in Idaho. And then the rest of it is provided potluck style from the attendees. So if you're interested in learning more, you can go to nipridealliance.com, and on our calendar page, there's an RSVP section. And if you'd like to volunteer, you can also click on the link to volunteer and get connected with our outreach coordinator, who can let you know how to do that. But
and that would be a week from this Thursday, right? So it's going to be on
yes.
November 20th, which is always the Transgender Day of Remembrance. And
yes.
then when did the festivities start?
Yeah. So Thursday, like you said, November 20th, and it's at the Human Rights Education Institute, and it starts at 5 p.m. and usually goes to 7:30-ish, depending on how long people want to stick around and eat.
Okay, so, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna play a little music while I load up
okay.
my computer here.
All right.
And then we'll get back to it.
All right.
All right, here we go.
Awesome.
Right. Americana Avenue receives support from Crazy Train Eatery in Spokane.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street in Spokane. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. Support for Out and About comes from the nonprofit Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture in Spokane. Now presenting Preston Singletary, Raven and the Box of Daylight, bringing the Tlingit creation story to life. And Fire, Rebirth and Resilience, exploring our region's major fires from the Great Fire of 1889 to today. More information at northwestmuseum.org. Support for Out and About comes from Eastern Washington University Running Start, where high school students can earn tuition-free credit before graduating. Applications at ewu.edu/runningstart.
Hey there, folks. Join me for a musical trip along Americana Avenue. Now on Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. Hear the greatest progressive songwriters from yesterday and today. Each week, I'll feature a specific artist and a vinyl spin of the week. It's music that plays to the human condition, Wednesdays at 6 on Thin Air Community Radio.
Okay, we're back, and I'm, of course, your host, Maeve. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, listening to Out and About, and I am talking to Sarah Lynch, who is the executive director of the Northern Idaho, or is it North or Northern?
It's North Idaho North Pride Idaho. Alliance.
I had written Northern. North Idaho Pride Alliance. Uh-huh. And we're talking about the event of Transgiving and Transgender Day of Remembrance this November 20th. It's going to be taking place at the Human Rights Education Institute. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then, so do you know how the whole Transgender Day of Remembrance got started? Or why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I've learned a little bit more of that history over the last couple of years, but African-American transgender woman who was murdered in 1998, and then the following year they held a vigil for her. I believe her name was Rita Hester, is that right?
Yeah, I think that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then we've just done it, you know, every year since then on that date.
And, you know, it's weird because sometimes the Human Rights Commission, I think, does a really good job of keeping track of names. And then sometimes the names aren't there. And sometimes the link is dead.
Sure.
You know, sometimes it's really a little bit of sleuthing. Uh-huh. And, you know, and I'll give you a name. Maybe later on I'll email the name to you, because she's somebody who I found out about from a friend of mine who had died. She had committed suicide.
Yes.
And it was, in June, but they didn't find out until August.
Right.
Find her till August. So,
yes.
And it was, it was very sad, but it's just so there are so many people that people don't know about too that suffer. And I think that. I think I read someplace that trans people are four times more likely to be victims of violence than any other group. I believe. I don't know where I'm going from, but
I think that's what's really difficult about TDOR, especially, is just seeing all the deaths, but the majority are due to homicide or suicide.
Yeah.
And that's the most difficult part, and especially the younger generation of trans folks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that it really underscores, it was so weird. I was reading, it was in the Wall Street Journal the other day. They had an article, it comes up on my Apple News feed, and it was like, yes, it looks like young people that it's really sort of like this whole trans thing was sort of a social construct that they were really, that it was, oh, my friend's trans, so I guess I'll be trans too, type of thing. And they told, I read the article first, it infuriated me when I saw it, but then I read it and was like, well, you know, they're making this case that, gee, now that it's really hard for kids to come out as trans, making it hard for them and not giving them any protections, for some reason, people aren't coming out as trans.
You know? Shocking.
Yeah, and they don't even mention that. But they talk about, you know, how this has changed over the last few years, you know, last year, especially this year. And it's like, well, trans people are always are under attack by an administration that can't say anything without bringing trans people into it. I mean, they spent millions of dollars on this last campaign in different places.
Yeah.
And they were mostly anti-trans advertisements. And then when they polled people and asked them, you know, what was at the top of their list for things that they were concerned about in their district, I think trans people, you know, having too many rights or whatever, came in at about 3%.
Right.
So it's just a total non-issue. So when you're subjected to that day in and day out, and you believe the messaging that you're hearing, of course you're going to be, I mean, I wouldn't have come out had I not been protected.
Correct.
You know, if I could have been fired, I wouldn't have done that to my family. I wouldn't have done that to my wife. I would have just sucked it up and I would have kept doing it. But when I had protections, I felt like, well, I can tell the truth about myself. And it still wasn't easy because there's so much of a stigma around it and embarrassment and all that kind of stuff to do.
Right.
You know, and I would imagine if you had parents and families that were really not good, that would be really tougher.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, see that kind of as, you know, I served under Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military for nearly 14 years. Like I couldn't come out. I was going to lose my job. I would lose my ability to fly, which was my passion. So obviously you're going to stay in the closet in that situation.
Right. Yeah. Did Don't Ask, Don't Tell come to the, but was it there before you retired, the repeal of it?
Yes. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, like I said, about, I think around 14 years into my career. So for 14 years I served, you know, closeted. And I do remember under Obama when, they fully allowed trans folks to serve openly.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, that day calling in my folks that I was leading and letting them know that this is the new rule. And, you know, we all got up and left and went back to work. Like,
did you have anybody take advantage of it? Did you see any trans people then at that point?
I didn't see any trans folks at that point. I think there were a couple of years ago, I went and spoke at Fairchild Air Force Base. And I met a trans person at a Pride event that they had.
Oh,
there.
Yes.
Yeah. I think an out trans service person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this Don't Ask, Don't Tell, mm-hmm. what was that like for you? I mean, what was that experience like?
Looking back, I guess it was kind of surreal. I mean, it was just like this double life of the professional and the personal, and they had to stay separate, you know, for survival reasons, like I talked about. You know, you'd lose your job. I wouldn't be able to do what I loved doing. And I think the biggest part of it is, you know, that it was kind of a double-edged sword, or a little bit hypocritical, obviously. It was don't ask and don't tell. So I couldn't tell, but folks ask you all the time. I remember on my first deployment, somebody asked me, oh, do you have somebody special to take you out before this deployment? And I had this like ethical crisis. Do I say yes and continue that conversation? And then which pronouns do I use? Do I change the pronoun to he, or do I just leave it as, you know, she, which was the honest answer, or do I just say no? And I think the most difficult thing about that whole time period was essentially making myself invisible and redirecting every conversation away from myself. You know, so that I didn't want anybody to talk about me because I couldn't talk about me.
Right. And yeah. probably, you know, you're a young person, so there's mm-hmm. probably guys asking you out
sure.
on dates and all yeah. that, you know? And,
yep.
And yeah, it's you know, it's funny. Was the vault still a thing when you were there? Like, did you go to the vault
oh,
to
yeah,
certify and all that
Fairchild.
Stuff?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we were there because you don't have to go do target study, EWO study.
Sure.
And then sometimes we would have like these people that would come down and brief us on tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. Well, back up a little bit. It's interesting to me that I think I entered the Air Force as kind of a Ronald Reagan Republican, younger uh-huh. person.
Yeah.
I came out 180 degrees different. And a lot of that was mm-hmm. because it was really being exposed to really intelligent people who had interesting ideas that I hadn't heard before.
Right.
Back then it wasn't an internet. You know, you'd read a book.
Uh-huh.
But also it was their social actions mm-hmm. that was the office. And they didn't mess around.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were like about racial harmony, everything. But you know, at that point, if you were Muslim, mm-hmm. it wasn't good. And if you were gay, I think those were
right.
like the two groups that people felt like they could persecute.
Yeah.
And I loved messing with these people. I had at one time we were getting briefed during the first Iraq war
mm-hmm.
and we were getting briefed on the threats.
Mm-hmm.
And the briefer, and this was from SAC headquarters, kept calling the Iraqis ragheads.
Oh.
And the ragheads are going to do this and the ragheads are going to do that. I finally couldn't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood up and I said, my mom's a raghead, which she's not.
yeah.
But I just wanted to make them feel bad.
Right.
And so I did that. Uh-huh. And so then they changed it to the Iraqis and stuff. And then uh-huh. another time we had people come down who had wanted to talk about human intelligence stuff, like
mm-hmm.
not being subject to being, recruited as a spy, basically.
Oh.
And they talked about, you know, when you're in a bar and things like that, how you, you know, be careful what you say about your job and
sure.
all these things.
Yep.
But one of the things they said was, and that's why being gay is not allowed in the military.
Right.
Because back then it wasn't even don't ask, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Why being gay is not allowed in the military is because if you were gay and then you got recruited, like you hooked up with somebody,
yeah.
then they could hold that over your head and say, oh, you better give us some secrets. I'm going to let everybody know you're gay
right.
and then you're going to be fired from your job.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so then I raised my hands. I'm like, well, this makes no sense because if it was okay to be gay, then this person would have nothing on you.
Right.
It seems to me like this, the security risk
legalize it.
is by not letting people be gay.
Right. Right.
And it was like one of those Spinal Tap, but ours goes to 11 moments,
uh-huh.
you know?
Yeah.
And, but yeah. But so to me, I never understood the rationale of it at all.
Well, right. It's not founded in logic, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you find a lot of slurs and stuff when you were flying or with people? I mean, it seems like to me.
Like just being a woman in a male dominated
field, yeah.
you know, so it was kind of like this double whammy.
Yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah. But you know, I suppose I knew that's how it was going to be going in.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of get used to it and armor up a little bit.
Right.
You got to get thick skin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, between that and, you know, being gay,
yeah.
A queer woman in the military, it definitely took a toll on my mental health
and it
was a struggle, you know, like we talked about earlier that the last 10 years were much more difficult than the first 10 years.
Right.
So.
And then when you came out, did you make an announcement to people when it was safe to say who you were?
No.
Or was it?
That's what's funny. So I was at a school for a year when that was repealed. And, you know, I think there were people in my class that had a good gaydar and knew. And so they
sure.
tried to say things like, you know, tried to make it seem like it was okay to talk to them. But I had been stuck in this survival mode of
yeah.
don't talk about myself for, you know, 14 years. So
yeah.
that felt invasive. And I think people don't understand too, that like coming out is not a one-time thing. You just walk out of the closet and then everybody knows. It's like every time I walk into a room, you know, I'm gauging how much of myself I can let people yes. see. Yeah. And so it's a continuous life process. It's not a one-time thing. But yeah, I mean, towards the end of my career, I got more comfortable with it. And,
yeah.
and you know, I think most of the folks that I worked with, you know, obviously respected me because I retired as a lieutenant colonel. So yeah. did
yeah.
all right.
Right. Yeah, you did yeah. great. Yeah. Like, that, mm-hmm. you know, and I think you're right about that. That process of coming out being not just a gradual thing, but also like gauging the room, like you said, but also, sure. at least for me internally, growing mm-hmm. up and knowing that there was something was up.
Yeah.
I always felt like I could like pray it away or it would go away or there would be these landmarks in my life. Like when I had my first girlfriend
mm-hmm.
or, you know, these things happen, I go through uh-huh. puberty or whatever.
Yeah.
I felt like these feelings I had, you know, which didn't really have a name for them back then.
Right.
You kind of feel like, okay, it's going to go away. Or you can be so busy that you don't think about what you are, or who you are.
Right.
You just stay super busy, which can be really good for your career.
Right. Exactly. You know? I was going to say the first 10 years was very good.
Yes.
It was very busy.
Lots of busyness, yep. lots of schools and yeah. things like that.
Uh-huh.
So, mm-hmm. yeah. And, you know, and so the kind of going back to the Trans Day of Remembrance.
Yeah.
What's it going to be like? So if somebody mm-hmm. shows up, what's the format? So people drive yeah. out there to Idaho.
Yeah.
They make sure they go to the bathroom.
Before they get there. Okay. So you'll be safe to go to the bathroom at HREI. I can assure
okay,
you of that.
Okay.
they're gender neutral bathrooms in the building. But yeah, go, you know, out to HREI, find yourself a parking spot, come on in. It'll be a warm, kind of casual welcome. We'll have, you know, seats set up for folks to sit in for the actual, you know, somber portion of the presentation. And I'll probably, you know, kick things off with a few words and then introduce you as our guest speaker.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm speaking. Yeah. I shouldn't sorry.
Yeah.
I won't talk very long for anybody who's on the fence about going. So, yeah.
So we'll have Maeve say a few words. And then we've got a trans woman in our community who also wants to say a few words. She's
Perfect.
Got just a short kind of poem to speak. So we'll let her... I give her an opportunity to do that.
Good.
And then we'll go through, we've got a slideshow of all the faces of the people that we're honoring. And we're just going to go through each one and say their names and have kind of a moment of silence, sort of a vigil type format. And then once that's finished, like I said, we'll transition to Transgiving and have some turkey and mashed potatoes and whatever potluck items anybody else wants to bring.
That sounds wonderful. And mm-hmm. you know, I think, you know, marriage equality happened, I feel like, because I people know gay and lesbian people, you know, they know them and then they also work with them. And then also that it just seemed unfair, you know, it doesn't seem fair that some people get this thing, but I think that's always been a hard thing with the trans community is that there's just not as many of us who are trans.
Right.
And so I would encourage people if you just want to come out and meet some trans people,
yeah.
and they're all going to be, mm-hmm. you know, I think sometimes people are scared away that, you know, and I think scared from that, or mm-hmm. they're going to be, you know, we're just people who want to live our lives and do good things for our community. And,
sure.
and, you know, have a family and play with our grandkids and just like
yeah.
everybody else, you know? And
yep.
so
yeah, absolutely.
I think it'd be great to kind of see it. It's a heavy, mm-hmm. it's a heavy thing. And I always feel like Trans Day of Remembrance is always kind of a dual-edged sword for me in a way, because mm-hmm. I really think that, these folks that would persecute us, I think a lot of them do it to satisfy their base and they really don't care one way or the other. I feel like they're just kind of, they're amoral, but there's certainly immoral people who want to see people get hurt and, get some sort of satisfaction from seeing people get sad or angry or you know, in other ways upset. And I just think that's one thing I don't like about Trans Day of Remembrance.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like, it's a necessary thing to do to talk about the toll, mm-hmm. but I would rather be seen to these people as a threat than to be seen as a victim, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
And so that's always hard for me in a way.
Yeah. 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 And I think, you know, our approach at NYPA is kind of a threefold approach. We try to educate, advocate, and then allow for networking as well. So, we also speak to a few of the statistics in, you know, Idaho specifically.
Yeah. Oh, good.
You know, the Trevor Project just came out with a mental health review of youth folks and specific to Idaho, it's over 70% of trans kids have expressed, symptoms of depression and anxiety. I think the number is around 30% of who have contemplated suicide and 15% have attempted.
Yeah.
And those are really sad and heavy, but I think also in that Trevor Project report, they talk about what is helpful. Like they've asked these kids, what's helpful to you?
Wonderful.
And what's helpful is for us to believe who they say they are and to, you know, support them and accept them for who they are, and not support a lot of this anti-trans policies and legislation that's coming out. So there's, you know, very tangible things we can do to support trans kids and help them, rather than just allow them to be torn down.
And I think people forget that when you're a kid too, is that mm-hmm. you really just kind of want to not disappoint your parents. Usually
right.
you want to be a good person, mm-hmm. and you know, and I think some people might scoff at that, but I would ask, because people would scoff at that, to look at yourself as a kid. Were you a person that, I know, if I ever felt like I let my parents down, I felt awful.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think about, you know, going to your parent and telling them this, especially, you know, I grew up really hyper religious.
Sure.
Place, which is okay. I mean, some religion can be okay. Mm-hmm. But I think that people feel like they may disappoint their parents and say things that'll make them feel sad, and they don't want to bring that. So that's just one more little thing that kids have to overcome too. And so that's where, as a parent, you have to be just so over the top and just encouraging, and may seem really goofy how. Because if you just say, well, it's fine, whatever you want to be, if that's kind of your attitude,
uh-huh.
I guess it's better than being angry about it.
Sure.
But you have to realize how tough this is for your kid too.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, and you know, and the kid knows how tough this is going to be for you as a parent.
Right.
You know, you take something away from people when you, when they thought of you one way and then you're actually somebody else or something else. So
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. I'm really excited to kind of hear about those things, you know, and
we're excited to have you.
Yeah. This will be really fun.
Yeah.
Foraying into North Idaho.
Yeah. It's brave of you.
Yes. I have thought about making a t-shirt. I've got a t-shirt press at home.
Yeah.
That just says, Transbassador to Idaho and have
I love it.
The Idaho flag with pink and white and blue stripes.
Looks
you know,
great.
And just wear that when I go backpacking next time.
Yeah.
I think people would think it was funny. I think they would just laugh about
it's
it.
Great.
You know? Yeah, we were up at backpacking up at Beehive Lakes probably about 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. Sarah and I were up there, and there were some young women from, I think, University of Idaho, who were there doing like water sampling and doing cataloging of plants and things like that.
Yeah.
And so they see Sarah and I, and they're like, oh, you guys are our queer elders, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's so in Idaho, you do find some acceptance in places you just wouldn't
expect
to find it.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think throughout my Air Force career, and then especially now, that's why I feel like visibility is so important.
Yes.
You can't be what you can't see, and it's tough, obviously. In Idaho, it's very rural, Northern Idaho, the whole panhandle, that's a pretty vast geographic expanse. And
yeah.
And so folks do feel isolated and they don't see the diversity that maybe they, feel that they are inside. And so,
plenty of queer people in mm-hmm. Kettle Falls yeah. or Colville or Chihuahua mm-hmm. or, that's just in Washington, mm-hmm. Sandpoint. Yeah. And it's, that does no, in fact, sometimes I think that queer folks are more than likely or like to go someplace where they are going to be left alone.
To a certain extent.
Might have to drive by that sign that says, uh-huh. welcome to Trump country every time
you go to Bonner's.
You go there, yeah. but it's like, well, uh-huh. okay.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go into my little cabin on my 20 uh-huh. acres and I'm not going to have to talk to anybody or see anybody. And
There's so much peace and quiet, I think, in North, like you said, you go hiking. I mean, the area is gorgeous.
It is just stunningly beautiful. Yes, it is. Yeah. And what has surprised you the most about living there coming from Washington? From the perspective of being gay.
I think, honestly, I'm probably surprised. I'm repeatedly surprised by the good people that step up.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you know much of the history of like Coeur d'Alene, but, it was home to the Aryan Nations back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And there were some incredible people that came together, to combat that in a very creative way. And,
I was here for that.
Yeah. The people that step up and the creativity and the organizing sometimes, coming from Washington, Idaho is a completely different ball of wax in terms of how we tackle the problems that we have. And so just every day, I think I'm blown away by the people who step up and help out where it's needed. Because our challenges in Idaho really truly are monumental. They're big.
Right. And I would imagine when mm-hmm. you go to a business and it has like a pride flag out, mm-hmm. That's kind of an act of courage on the behalf of the store owner that puts
Absolutely.
It up,
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I just read, somebody had posted a thing from, I don't know if you saw it, from Chowderhead. Mm-mm. Somebody, which is a restaurant on Monroe, somebody had written the proprietors a thing saying, I'm going to go into your restaurant. And then I saw the pride flag. Well, uh-huh. I'm not going to frequent your business. And you have your freedom of speech and I have mine. And I'm not going to go eat at your restaurant.
Right.
And then the person said, well, that's great because I don't want blankety blank people like you.
Yep.
In my place. And I always think about that, how, when I left the fire department, I really came into a great community in the theater community, but also here and then, mm-hmm. but really the queer community in Spokane is just such a welcoming place. And I always tell people, well, if you ever want to do karaoke, uh-huh. I don't care if you're straight, queer, whatever, go to 9 because people are going to get on their feet and cheer for you because people are really supportive of each other.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that is, people don't know what a nice feeling that is to just have nice people. And if I was a business too, I would say, how can I weed out the people who aren't nice? I'll put up a pride flag.
It truly is an incredible community,
Yeah.
When you have to work so hard to love, you tend to know how to love well. So
And also, mm-hmm. when I came out, I found out that people, it was weird because it made the paper and stuff. And then people were coming up to me and almost felt like a priest hearing confessions because people would come up and they wanted to say, well, these are things that I've struggled with in my life.
Yes.
And I did find out from people that I've known almost a great deal of my life, people that were really respected, that people would have known, I no idea that they were gay.
Uh-huh.
And they came up to me and they said, hey, I want to tell you about something that I've kept hidden my whole life.
Yeah. Suddenly you become a safe person. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But I need to, I've never told anybody, I've never told my wife, but right. here's what happened to me. Or you had people saying, you know, I've got a drinking problem,
yeah.
you know, or whatever. Uh-huh. People, things, it felt so mm-hmm. good, I think, for people to have somebody that they knew that was not going to be a judgmental person, right. obviously.
Yeah.
And yeah. so that's really a gift of the community. So if you mm-hmm. come to this event, let's pitch it one last time.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
yeah. So NYPA's Transgender Day of Remembrance and Transgiving will be held at HREI in downtown Coeur d'Alene on November 20th. That's Thursday next week from 5 to 7 p.m. And we'll have Maeve there as our guest speaker.
And if you just search Transgiving, uh-huh. North Idaho.
Yeah.
That's going to be the first thing that pops up.
Yeah. Yeah. Our website is nipridealliance.com yeah. and you can find it on our calendar there.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. well, I should say the first thing that's going to pop up, it's going to spell correct it to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's but true. We'll try to do that. Yes. It doesn't like the word that we made.
It doesn't, but yeah. it is a great word and yeah. I'm really looking forward to being there. I feel like we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything that we haven't? Well, what else do you like to do? I knew you were, uh-huh. when I talked to you last, which was quite a few years ago,
yeah.
you were actually a flight instructor too on the side. Yeah. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, I sure am. I still get to do my flying job. I am not really flight instructing too much anymore. The organization that I'm with has started up a charter company, and so I'm
cool.
part of that that startup. So
I'm
the trainer for the charter pilots, and we've been in business so far with that for about a year. Or so, so that's really exciting to get to continue the flying.
That is yeah. so cool.
I
when I got my pilot's license, I was mm-hmm. 17 or 18, and I yeah. had it came on like cardstock.
Yeah.
It's just a cardstock thing, you know? Yeah. And it just went through the wash. It was all messed up. And eventually I lost it someplace.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, I thought, I'm going to get this thing replaced.
Uh-huh.
So I got, but, you know, in order to get your name on it, your new name,
mm-hmm.
and I think gender marker change, you have to go into a Gato office, I think, to do that.
Uh-huh.
You can't just do it. But they did give me my card. And
I
showed my youngest son that,
mm-hmm.
hey, look, I've got my pilot. He's like, whoa, wait a minute. You can just go and fly. No, you can't just do that.
yeah.
And I go, well, technically, uh-huh. I suppose I could, but I would never. I mean, I feel like I would have to start from basically ground zero.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Sarah, for being here so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm looking forward to next Thursday. I've been doing draft after draft of speech.
Okay, good.
and I feel like they've all stunk. I'm doing one here on the weekend after, on that Saturday after.
Okay.
And that's easy. That's a poem. A uh-huh. poem that I've done in other places before.
Okay.
So that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this one, I want to hit it out of the park. Yeah. So, all right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for everybody. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1, 92.3 FM. And we rejoin our regularly scheduled programming.
The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
You're tuned to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
On this vote, the ayes are 60, the nays are 40. The bill, as amended, is passed.
The longest government shutdown in history could soon end after seven Democratic senators and one independent joined Republicans to pass a short-term government funding bill that now goes to the House. We'll look at the growing calls for Chuck Schumer to resign as Senate Minority Leader over the deal. Then to Chicago, where protesters have denounced federal immigration agents for dragging a daycare teacher out of a Spanish immersion school in front of students and parents. We'll speak to the mother of one of the children.
Diana is a wonderful mother, teacher, and friend to our community, and we are grieving her absence tonight. We are full of sadness, but we are also filled with rage.
Yes.
Diana was targeted, stolen on her way to care for our children by armed intruders from a private business without a warrant.
Then Free Joanne Little. A new documentary looks back at the 1975 murder trial of the first woman in U.S. history to be acquitted for using deadly force to resist sexual assault.
We recorded this song about a woman named Joanne Little. I remember thinking that this could be my daughter, my sister, my mother, could be any woman on the planet.
We'll speak to filmmaker Yoruba Richa. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. federal government shutdown has entered its 42nd day. On Monday night, a group of seven Democratic senators ratified a deal with Republican senators to approve a bill to reopen the government and end the longest shutdown in U.S. history. The bill notably does not include an extension of the Affordable Care Act subsidies. The Senate Majority Leader John Thune has agreed to a separate vote on them. The measure now heads to the House, which has not been in session since mid-September. The House vote on the spending package could come as early as Wednesday afternoon. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders called the vote a horrific mistake. Meanwhile, House Minority Leader